Mildred was able to stand up straight, but even she had to duck her head a bit to avoid hitting it against the heavy overhead doors.
What now?
Ryan pushed his right forearm against one of the doors. It didn't budge. For the second try, he put away his Sig Sauer and pushed against the door with both arms. This time, the door moved slightly.
Jimmy and Jack, one on either side of me.
The armorer and the albino took up positions to Ryan's left and right and got ready to push on the door. The rest of the group readied their blasters.
On three. One, two, three.
On three, they all pushed together. The door moved, and they could hear the metal hinges cracking. An understandable protest, considering the hinges likely hadn't moved in close to a century.
Again.
Once more, the three men pushed against the metal door. At last, it began to move, allowing dirt, dust, and daylight to spill down through the long crack that had opened up above them. They continued to push, but now Doc had joined them, giving just the little extra force they needed to get the door fully open. The portal became lighter and lighter, then flopped over like a top hatch on a war wag. With the first door opened, they set to work on the second. It moved more easily than the first, and they soon found themselves standing at the edge of a long-abandoned farmer's field, with nothing around them but knee-high grass, high stands of rocks, and clumps of weeds covering acres of rolling land in every direction. Ryan and the others took a look around. A stand of trees grew some 50 yards to their left, but mostly they saw only wide-open spaces. Farther on, perhaps a mile or two away, there were more wooded areas, and then more farmland.
Any idea where we are now?
JB lowered his glasses.
Middle of nowhere, it'd be my guess.
Ryan climbed up and out of the hole in the ground and onto the field. He immediately turned back to help lift out the others. In minutes, they were all standing on firm ground.
Yep, guess we can close it up.
The last thing they wanted was someone or something stumbling onto the Matrans technology. Ryan put a hand under the edge of one of the doors. With JB's help, he lifted the door and let it fall. He hadn't intended for it to make such a loud noise as it closed, but without anyone on the landing to ease the door into place, the noise couldn't be helped. Jack and Doc lifted the second door and let it down on top of the first. It closed with a slightly smaller bang, but still one loud enough to attract attention. With the doors closed, the exit to the gateway was nearly invisible. The ground was disturbed slightly, but after a few sweeps of their feet and hands, there was no evidence of anything unusual lying just beneath the surface of the field.
Well, it's definitely one way.
Maybe a far escape?
An escape hatch was definitely a possibility. That seemed to fit with the sparseness of the installation's construction and outfitting. Anyone coming through this gateway was on a one-way trip, but why would such an installation be needed, and why here? Hopefully, both questions would be answered in time.
By the three Kennedys!
Ryan turned in time to see Doc's feet being pulled out from under him by a strange muti that had apparently crawled through the grass toward them. It was crouched low to the ground and seemed to move on all fours like a canine. It was gnawing on Doc's leg, trying to tear away the material of his pants in order to get at the pale white flesh that lay beneath. Before the other members of the group could raise their weapons, Ryan had leveled his blaster and squeezed off a single shot that caught the muti in the shoulder. The impact of the blast rolled the muti away from Doc's leg. As the one-eyed man prepared to get off a second shot at the muti's skull, a blaster roared on his right. A neat black hole appeared in the middle of the mutant's forehead, and a large mass of gray matter exploded out the back of the creature's skull, taking its life along with it. Ryan turned and saw Mildred lower her blaster. A little embarrassed by being taken unawares, Doc got to his feet, unsheathed his sword, and was about to run the muti through when Jack's voice stopped him.
Ma!
Ryan looked across the field toward the nearby stand of trees and could see that there were at least half a dozen more of the hungry muties ambling toward them. They had multicolored fur covering their bodies and looked like a cross between human and dog. However, they each had flaps of clothing material around their midsections, suggesting rudimentary intelligence. As with the first one, they moved low to the ground, like the canines they resembled, hidden by the grass, but also betrayed by it as their bodies pushed the taller grass under and left a trail across the field that any scout could follow.
Hold your fire!
He had his blaster leveled, but he wasn't sure that the muties were going to try what the first one had. And as he watched, his instincts turned out to be right. Instead of attacking the members of the group, The half-dozen muties crawled up to their dead brother and immediately set into its body with their teeth and hands. In minutes, they were feeding wildly on the carcass, ripping into its flesh and muscles with all the savagery of a pack of starving wolves.
Kenny's.
And crazed ones to boot.
At least they're getting to eat.
At Dean's remark, Ryan instantly went back into survival mode.
Looks like they'll be busy for a while, so let's get the hell out of here while we have the chance.
But where are we gonna go?
Christy, do you sense anything?
The fiery-headed woman closed her eyes and concentrated for a moment, trying to see if she could sense any nearby danger.
I can't feel anything at all. Sorry, lover.
Okay, then. Let's head up that rise to get the lay of the land. I'll take point, then Christy, Jack, Dean, Doc, and Mildred. JB, you cover the rear. Okay, people, let's go.
Have I ever told you the story of the great man, Bauer?
Walking behind his baron toward the main office, Norman Bauer rolled his eyes for what seemed like the 100th time this week. Not that he would actually do that in Baron Fox's field of view, though. The man might be totally insane, but he was the Baron of Fox Farm, and as such, he could order the death of anyone in the Ville at a moment's whim. He didn't want to get on the Baron's bad side, especially since he had risen so far as to be Fox's right-hand man and chief accountant. He had learned to take the Baron's outbursts of insanity by simply staying by the wayside and acting subservient.
No, Baron, please enlighten me.
He had, in fact, heard this story every single day for the past 10 years, but wisely held his tongue.
During the pre-dark times, one of the most lucrative businesses in the Deathlands was the pornography trade. Billions of dollars were spent by a sex-starved public for skin mags, vid tapes, vid discs, and the like. And the great man was the undisputed lord of all of it. He resided in a huge mansion with hundreds of scantily clad women who would do his every bidding. The man would rut with hundreds of women. He lived such a life of luxury that he never even wore work clothes. He spent his entire life wearing nothing more than a bathrobe.
At this point in the narrative, Baron Fox ruffled his own bathrobe to attract Bauer's attention to it. Bauer politely nodded, not really interested.
Unfortunately, Skydark ended all of the great man's empire, and himself along with it. But he's not dead, Norman. I hear him speak to me whenever I sleep. He wants me to rebuild what he once had, to recreate his empire. He says that we must rot, but that we must never love. Love leads to commitment, commitment leads to marriage, and marriage goes against the great man's wishes. When you are married, you can only rot with one partner. The great man said that we must rot with multiple partners. His old vids show this to be so. It is human nature. Did you know that most pre-dark marriages ended in divorce, Bauer?
No, sir, I did not.
Oh, it's human nature, Bauer. Man was not meant to rut with just one woman. So spoke the great man. So here, at this farm I have created, I have honored the memory of the great man by living as he lived, as his people lived, at the writ of the holy rut.
At the Baron's glance toward him at this last pronouncement, Bauer smiled with all the fake sincerity he could muster. At least Fox was reaching the end of his tirade, and they could finally get down to the business at hand.
I have henceforth decreed that all citizens of this Ville be able to lay with one another to pleasure each other and to pleasure themselves. And the offspring of that pleasure will be the future of our civilization. The legacy of the great man lives on at Fox Farm.
With that final pronouncement, Baron Franz Fox held out his pipe and lit it. Knowing that this ceremonial effect marked the end of the Baron's speech, Bauer did as he always did. He clapped not out of enthusiasm, but out of false deference to the crazed individual he worked for. It was all bullshit, of course. No one at Fox Farm rutted for pleasure, except perhaps the sec men. It was solely to produce offspring for trade. It was all just an act, and Bauer wondered, not for the first time, if Fox was putting on appearances, not for the accountant's benefit, but for his own. Fox could justify to himself any way he wanted, but that was the truth, plain and simple. Not that it mattered much to Norman Bauer. He had a job to do, and he was going to do it.
Despite Baron Fox's previous jovial attitude, once he and Bauer entered the office, it quickly went away upon the sight of the woman inside. Fox seemed to switch personalities at a 180-degree turn as he stared at the woman. There was fear in